So we're still in our series on home improvement. This week, we're actually looking at forgiveness. But before we get into that, let's watch a clip. You can go to the next slide, Gabe. Let's watch a clip from one of my favorite shows of all time. It's Home Improvement.
Look at this. These beveled edges, you can't see a seam. This guy's work is great. Can you imagine what this will look like tomorrow?
Pretty much the same.
Why do you say something like that?
I fired Ian.
For a moment there, I thought you said you fired my granite guy.
I did. When I gave him a lift home, he came on to me.
You fired the granite guy.
Did you hear what I said? He came on to me.
What did he say? He had a nice outfit or something?
He kissed me.
What did you do?
I pushed him away.
Well, you should have fired him.
I did fire him.
You fired the granite guy? What? He's here one day and hitting on my wife? What is that about?
I know. I should have told you the whole story the minute that Ian walked in the door.
The whole story? You and Ian have a story?
Well, you remember when I told you that a guy at the Y asked me out on a date?
Ian was the guy that didn't know you were married.
Yeah.
Well, why didn't you tell me this?
Because I thought you'd get jealous and it would make you crazy.
What did it make you, Jill?
Now, come on, you're getting paranoid.
Am I?
I had no idea that this was going to turn out this way. All I wanted was for you not to fire another guy and for us to get our kitchen finished.
Did you? When you secretly have the hots for the granite man.
I have the hots for any man. Look, you know what I mean. You probably have plenty of secrets from me.
No, I don't. You always talk about trust in this marriage. You do something like this and you break it.
I feel terrible. I'm really sorry.
Are you? Or maybe inside you're jumping for joy, huh? Huh? Maybe you and Ian are just spinning a web of twisted little lies. And I'm just your prawn.
Tim, a prawn is a big shrimp.
Right. You can't play chess with a crustacean.
I love that line, you can't play chess with a crustacean. Extremely accurate, but... Yeah, it's a pawn. If you live in this world, if you have any relationships, you're going to get hurt. I know it's kind of a bold statement, but if you live in this world, you have relationships, you're going to get hurt. Chances are, you're going to end up hurting somebody. I remember it was about 9 years ago, Jen and I were going through some struggles in our marriage and personal lives, and we're on a walk, and God had been doing just miraculous work in us. And we're on a walk, and she looked at me, and she goes, you know, God's really shown me that I have some areas of unforgiveness for you, and I have some areas of bitterness that I need to deal with. And I was like, yes, God's speaking to her. God's moving in her life. That's great. And then she looked at me, and she goes, and I think you have bitterness in your life, too. And I was like, let's go back to you and dealing with what you have to deal with. But it was true. God ended up revealing in my life over the next few weeks that there were areas of bitterness. What is forgiveness? The word forgive means to wipe the slate clean, to pardon, to cancel a debt. And I like this quote. It says, it's important to remember that forgiveness is not granted because a person deserves to be forgiven. Instead, it's an act of love, mercy, and grace. Maybe, you know, you've had a best friend that turns on and all of a sudden begins speaking bad about you in your life. Maybe you have an inadvertent misunderstanding with your spouse and it starts giving, or you have areas of pain and hurt from that. Maybe you borrow something without asking. Maybe your brother or sister comes in your room and eats your last bit of candy. Maybe you inadvertently share a secret of somebody's. I mean, there's lots of different ways that we can cause pain and hurt, and that there's areas that we need to deal with in forgiveness. Forgiveness is not just about the person you forgive. It's about allowing healing to happen in you. Let me say that one more time. It says, forgiveness is not just about the person you forgive. It's about allowing healing to happen in you. So let's go back to the story on Joseph. And I'll give you kind of, I know we kind of jumped two-thirds of the way through this story, but Joseph was the 11 of 12 brothers. He was the second youngest, but he had a special relationship with his dad because he was Rachel's oldest child. Now, I don't know if you remember the story of Jacob and Esau. I know we've kind of gone over that the last couple weeks. But Jacob, when he went away from his brother, the first person that he saw was Rachel, the first girl that he saw, and he fell madly in love with her. It says he even kissed her at that moment. And he ran to Laban, his father-in-law, and says, what can I do to marry her? And he said, work for me for 7 years. So he worked for 7 years. Laban ends up deceiving him. At the end of that 7 years, instead of marrying Rachel, he kind of swings it so that he marries Leah instead. And so Jacob comes back and says, what, you deceived me? What can I do to marry Rachel? And he says, work for me another 7 years. So he worked for 14 years just to be able to marry her. There was a special place in Jacob's life for Rachel. And Joseph was the oldest of her two brothers, of her two children. And Benjamin was the other one. So you have in this story, you have this special bond between Jacob and Rachel. And then you have Jacob transferring that to his kids. I mean, he sets it up. So Reuben's actually the oldest, but Reuben committed a sin, so his birthright was taken away from him. He was going to be the one that was to receive the blessing of the father. And he turns it and he skips all the other brothers and he goes right to Joseph. And part of that was he gave him this amazing coat. It was the, I don't know if you guys, there was a one of my favorite musicals, Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat. It's a great musical in the 80s. But he gives him this special coat. So there gets, in the scripture, it says, when his brother saw that his father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not bring themselves to speak peaceably to him. They didn't like how special Joseph was. He got treated differently. Even if, and I skipped one part, but Joseph would be sent out to his brothers to bring reports back. So he was the tattletale. And it said he came back and brought a bad report. So there was such a tension between the brothers. And the brothers had finally said, we've had enough. So they're out tending the sheep or out tending the flocks. And they see Joseph coming to check on him from a distance. And all the brothers conspire. And mind you, Benjamin's still at home. The older brothers conspire and they said, we're going to kill him. Now, it's interesting that Reuben says, let's not kill him. Let's throw him in the hole. And part of what he does is he's trying to go, when I come back later at night, I'm going to get him out of here so that nothing bad happens to him. But Reuben goes away. And while he's gone, the rest of the brothers see this caravan of Ishmaelites coming through and they get this great idea. Let's sell him. And so they sell him into slavery. All in this one instant, Joseph loses everything. He's rejected by his brothers, rejected by his family, and he loses his stature and his plate, and he gets sold off into slavery. Years ago, I had not quite as my, although if my sisters had an opportunity, I'm sure they would have sold me into slavery. When I was 13 years old, my mom passed away from cancer. And for the next 4 years, my dad and I grew extremely close. Had a relationship with him like I never had before. And at 17, he married my stepmom. And as we got to know her, really came apparent that she's a little bit verbally abusive. And she has a way of cutting people down. And for a period of time, I became the object of her scorn. And I remember my dad, there's several times over a period of time that my dad just kept telling me, I wish you had a better relationship with your stepmom. I wish you could be closer to her. I wish you could have a better relationship with her. It's one of those moments that you never quite forget. It's embedded in me. But I invited my dad out to lunch. And I said, we need to clear the air. We need to deal with some things. As I'm sitting down, I can still remember the restaurant, I can still remember all the chairs, I can still remember the tables. And I began explaining to him some of the pain that had happened over the last 4 years, or the last several years, I don't remember exactly how many, but, and the things that were said, and the things that were done, and the challenges that it gave me. And I said, Dad, if you want me to have this kind of relationship with her, I need to see, there's got to be something that says things are going to change. There's got to be some amount of, what I specifically said is, Dad, she needs to ask for forgiveness. And my dad looked at me and said, that'll never happen. She's not going to ask for forgiveness. She's not going to say that anything went wrong. And he said, and I'm not going to ask her to. And as I stood up from that table, I remember thinking, just at that moment, that I had lost my home. You know, that home as a kid is a place that you can go when everything else is falling apart, when everything else is going crazy, that there's stability at home. You can go home and find a place. Forgiveness is not just about the person you forgive. It's about allowing healing to happen in you. So how did Joseph do this in the face of adversity? First thing was, he forgave them. He forgave them. He forgave them even before there was an opportunity to make things right. Even before there was an opportunity with his brothers to make any kind of reconciliation. Now, we don't see any specific part in the story where Joseph says, where he's dealing or wrestling with the emotions, wrestling in it. But what we do see is that he wasn't bound by his past. So he was sold into slavery into the Ishmaelites. They end up selling him to a guy named Potiphar. And Potiphar, it's amazing. He said he noticed everything Joseph put his hands to became successful. This is what it says. The Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man, and he was in the house of the Egyptian master. His master saw that the Lord was with him, and then let the Lord cause everything that he did to succeed in his hands. Does that sound like someone who's holding on to bitterness? And then he gets falsely accused and gets thrown in jail, and he becomes the chief of the prisoners. And it says this, but the Lord was with Joseph, and he extended kindness to him. He granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. The warden put all the prisoners who were in the prison under Joseph's authority, and he was responsible for everything that was done there. I mean, it's amazing. Every position, every place that Joseph goes, he becomes successful. He wasn't bound by what happened in the past. Even when he gets to Pharaoh, he finally gets to meet Pharaoh. And this is what Pharaoh. So Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has made all this known to you, there is no one as intelligent and as wise as you. How would you like that said about you? You will be over my house, and all the people will obey your commands. Only with regard to the throne will I be greater than you. It's amazing. When we have bitterness or when we have unforgiveness in our life, it ends up seeping its way into every portion of your life. It seeps into your relationships with your family. It seeps into relationships with your kids, with your friends. Eventually, it comes through. And somehow Joseph was able to reconcile this and was able to forgive his brothers before his brothers even show up many years later to bow down in front of him. His prophecies came true. He had already dealt with it before they even showed up. And you can see this when Joseph reveals himself. You know, in the scripture that I read, it says, Joseph could no longer keep his composure. His brothers are showing up. He's seeing Judah change heart, and he can't keep his composure anymore. He has to reveal himself. And he says this, please come near me. I am Joseph, your brother, the one you sold into Egypt. Don't be worried or angry with yourself for selling me here, because God sent me ahead of you to preserve life. God had worked out in Joseph's life even before his brothers had an opportunity to be there. You're not always going to have an opportunity to reconcile relationships. I've honestly never had an opportunity to reconcile my relationship with my dad or my stepmom. But God did an amazing thing in me. I remember through the next few years, as I was sitting in worship at the Cincinnati Vineyard, God began peeling me apart, peeling all the hardness, peeling all the pain. And in his grace and mercy began showing me who my dad is, began showing everything my dad had put in me. The moments that he saved me from so much pain, just the little comments, and God began bringing them back. And it was like all the anger, all the pain, all the hurt just began shedding away. But it's funny, forgiveness is a choice in the same breath, because I can pick that up in an instant. I can go back to the pain that was caused. I can go back to those moments, but I have to constantly lay it down. And if you parallel this with who Jesus is, even before you were born, even before you committed a sin, even before anything ever happened, he extended forgiveness to us and through Christ at the cross. I mean, that's an amazing statement. Before you were born, Jesus offered forgiveness. And he says in Revelation, I stand at the door and knock. Anyone who comes, I'm going to come and sit down and eat with them. And that's an amazing promise. So let me ask you this. Are you being held captive by your past? And then you see the second part of that is Joseph rested in God's sovereignty. He had such an amazing grasp on who God, on God's overwhelmingly control of his life. If you look, we can go back to Genesis. And he said to his brothers, please come near me. And they came near. I'm Joseph, your brother, the one that you sold into Egypt. Now don't be worried or angry with yourselves for selling me here, because God sent me ahead of you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years. There are 5 more years without plowing or harvesting. God sent me ahead of you to establish you as a remnant within the land and to keep alive by a great deliverance. Therefore, it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me father to Pharaoh, lord of the entire household, ruler over all the land of Egypt. And then again, you see, towards the tail end, after his father passes away, his brothers get scared again. And his brothers send ahead of him, kind of like some of the stories we heard a little bit earlier, earlier in the series that we looked at. And his brothers set ahead, trying to, let's set peace in front of him. But this is what Joseph said. It says, do not be afraid. Am I in the place of God? You planned evil against me. God planned it for good, to bring about the present result, the survival of many. Therefore, do not be afraid. I will take care of you and your little ones. And he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. In the New Testament, Ephesians 6:12, it says, for our battle is not against flesh and blood, but against rulers, against the authorities, against the world powers of darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavens. We don't always see God's plan. We don't always know why are these things happening. I mean, who in their right mind says, God has a plan for me because my brothers are selling me into slavery? And not only that, but now I go into the house of Potiphar, and I get falsely accused by his wife of trying to rape her. So I get thrown into jail. And then I get thrown into jail, and he interprets a couple dreams for a couple of Pharaoh's servants, and the only thing he tells them is, remember me. And it was 2 years later that the baker that finally remembered and said, oh yeah, I remember about this guy in prison. He rested in God's sovereignty. Jesus rested in God's sovereignty. You can see in the Garden of Gethsemane when Jesus gets away from his disciples and he's praying to God, it says he was so stressed that blood was coming through his sweat. That's stressed. In the garden, he says, it's not my will, but it's yours. He said, if there's any other way we can do this, I'm open to it, please. But I'm going to rest in what you're doing. And then after that, you have when Judas comes in with the soldiers, and he's standing before Jesus, and Peter draws the sword and cuts off the guy's ear. And he said, "Peter, if you only knew that at any moment I could call a legion of angels down." But he didn't. And then also when he's in front of Pilate, and Pilate's asking him, "Why aren't you saying anything? Don't you know who I am?" And Jesus responds, "You wouldn't have any authority if it wasn't given to you from my Father above." He rested in who and the plan that he knew. And Joseph rested in the plan that he knew. Do we always understand why these things happen? No. Do we understand all the details and have it all laid out so that we can grasp it and fully understand it? Absolutely not. But he does, and he did. And that gave him the ability to go to his brothers. "You didn't do this. God allowed it to happen." Do you know that? Do you know that in life, even if you look at Job, it said Satan had to come in and ask permission to touch Job. He had to ask permission. He does not have full authority to do whatever he wants, whenever he wants, however he wants. God is the one who dictates. God's the one who allows. Do we understand why? Not always. Let me ask you a question. Are you resting in God's plan? It's interesting, kind of a little side note to this, was that Joseph just didn't let his brothers come in. He had forgiven his brothers. You can see that throughout his life. He didn't have any angst to him. When they showed up, I mean, he's the second in command of all of Egypt. No one had any more authority other than Pharaoh than Joseph. He could have wiped his brothers out when his brothers showed up. He didn't have to let them even go back to his father. But what does Joseph do? Joseph tests him. He wants to see what has really gone on in my brothers' lives all these years that they've been away. Have they changed? And so Joseph picks Benjamin. I mean, he's pestering the brothers about all these different questions. When the first time they show up to get food, Joseph is asking all these different questions to the point they're like, when they get back to their dad, they're like, "He asked a ton of questions. I don't quite get why he was so interested in you. Why he's so interested in our younger brother." But Joseph knew Benjamin was still alive, and Benjamin had a unique place because he was the other child of Rachel. And so his point was, don't come back unless you bring Benjamin. Don't. You can't come back and ask for any more food, so that he knew they would have to come back with Benjamin. And he sets a trap. He puts a gold, he puts a silver cup in the top of their bags, because in the bag of Benjamin's bag specifically, because he wants to see what is their response. Do you know it's okay to set boundaries? Forgiveness does not mean you have to open yourself up to abuse. It doesn't mean that you have to constantly put yourself back in a position of being abused. Now, I'll make a side note, and this is mostly for my kids' perspectives. If something happens in the house, like somebody takes something, you don't have to set traps at home to try and catch your brother and sister. Are you really making a change? These are big things. We're talking big, big issues, right? But you don't have to subject yourself and open yourself up to more pain. Forgiveness and confrontation are two separate issues. Forgiving someone is releasing them from a debt. Confrontation of sin, we need to be able to do both. Forgiveness is unconditional. That is something we need to be doing because Christ set the standard. We also need to be able to confront sin where there is sin. And we need to be able to talk to people in love for restoration. The whole point is restoration for confronting. It's not to go, "You hurt me, you're a bad person, now you have to pay penance to me." That's not it. It's being able to confront someone in love to see the person grow, to see the person come to Christ. And that's where we have to separate the two. I've had a bunch of conversations. It's amazing when you start working on your sermon preparation, you run across all these different circumstances. You know, even with the big news in the news today with one of the oldest Duggar, Josh Duggar, and the things that have gone on, and the amazing amount of stuff that people say. Joseph needed to see if they changed. And that's why when Judah's sitting there, and Judah's fighting for his brother, and fighting for his dad, and he just can't hold it back anymore. And he wants to restore the relationship, and he wants to see that brought back together. There was in Seattle in 2003, it was November 5th, 2003, there's a guy named Gary Ridgway. Some of you may remember the name. He was called the Green River Killer. He was one of the most prolific serial killers. I wouldn't say prolific. He is one of the most... what's that? Notorious, thank you. Notorious serial killers. He, on November 5th, 2003, he pled guilty to killing 48 different people. It said after that that there was another 49 that he confessed to. And which is really amazing to me that the prosecutor offered him a plea deal to let him get away from the death penalty, to just spend life in prison. And the main reason was he wanted people, the 48 murders that they did know about, he wanted closure for the families. So they offered him a plea deal. And after he had pled guilty to the 48 murders, they gave an opportunity for families to address him. And go ahead to the next slide. And this is a small clip of what happened there.
I wish for him to have a long, suffering, cruel death.
He's going to go to hell, and that's where he belongs.
But then the emotionless facade finally cracked when the father of one of his victims appeared to surprise him with a dose of human kindness.
Mr. Ridgway, there are people here that hate you. I'm not one of them. You've made it difficult to live up to what I believe, and that is what God says to do, and that's to forgive. You are forgiven, sir.
And in that, they said he sat stoic for the entire trial, which I think was a fairly short trial, other than pleading guilty to the 48 crimes. He was emotionless. He was almost like he didn't even care. Some of the people that were coming forward said it was so difficult because he didn't even remember the names of the people that he had murdered. If anybody has a right to be angry, it's those people. If anybody has a right to be bitter, it's them. They have every reason to be angry at Gary Ridgway. And I love what Linda Rule's dad, Robert, said. He said, "You've made it difficult." Because when we get hurt, when something happens to us that we have no control over, he's never going to apologize. We don't know that there will be a transformation of his life. We don't know. But here's a dad who lost his daughter. She was a runaway. And he made the choice. He said, it's difficult, but I know what Christ has called me to. And you can see that paralleled when we look at the cross, when we look at what Jesus did for us, when we look at who he is in our lives. And I love this. Terry Virgo, you can go to the next slide. Terry Virgo tweeted this out. He said, "How incredibly inappropriate it is for one who has been released by forgiveness to refuse to grant forgiveness to another." And you can parallel this with the verse in Ephesians. "And be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving one another, just as God also forgave you in Christ." Forgiveness is not just about the person you forgive. It's about allowing healing to happen in you. Forgiveness, you're releasing someone from debt, but you're also releasing the pain that you're holding. You are canceling a debt. You know, and you can look through the different parables that Jesus spoke about. There was a, you know, where a guy walks into a king and is begging for forgiveness, and then he goes out to the gate and is choking somebody to death because they owe him money. We've been forgiven so much. And as Christ works in you, as Christ is in you, he's going to work out those forgiveness issues in you. And sometimes we don't always see them. Like when my wife looked at me and said, "I think you have bitterness." Bitterness and unforgiveness ruins marriages. It ruins relationship with kids. It ruins our relationships with our friends. It doesn't mean you have to be a punching bag. That's not what I'm saying. It doesn't mean that you have to go back to an abusive relationship or abusive household. But we have to be able to deal with those issues in our heart. Because we didn't deserve forgiveness at the cross. We don't deserve any of this stuff. But yet it was given to us, which gives us the opportunity to worship. I am so thankful, like in worship, when I have those moments, when I remember what Christ has done for me and the fact that I didn't deserve it, it gives me unction to be able to praise him and gives us ability to let that work out in our lives. So let me ask you two questions as we go here. One is, are you being held captive by your past? I had a friend 9 years ago call me on the phone, one of the weirdest conversations I've had. And it was a friend from college. He was a guy that was so held captive by unforgiveness and by his past. And he was calling to make restoration with everybody that he had ever known, that he could ever think of, to work out unforgiveness issues. And in the conversation, he brought up some friends of ours, mutual friends, something that happened in the fifth grade, and he felt like he needed to go and call them and deal with them on it. And we went out to dinner, and I remember just sitting there, and I was like, you don't have to do that. You don't have to call somebody to make things right. You need to deal with it in your own heart, and you need to deal with it there. He walked away. It was kind of like, yeah, I disagree with you. I'm going to call these people anyway. But are you being held captive by your past? My friend was completely held captive. He wasn't able to grow and mature. And the second thing is, are you resting in God's plan, his sovereignty? Are you really resting in it? Or are you trying to argue with people? Are you trying to fight for your rights? I know we're Americans. That's hard not to do. We got to fight for our right. There's a song in the 80s, "Fight for Your Right to Party." Yeah, that's good. Are you holding on to your rights? Is this what you're holding on to? Or are you holding on to the fact that God has a bigger plan? A lot of things happen in life that are painful, that are hurtful, that can draw you to your knees and make you cry. But God has a plan. Beyond all that pain, beyond everything else, God has a plan. And are you resting in that? I want to take a little bit, I don't know, Randy, if you'd be willing to come up and we can give opportunities for prayer. Tammy, do you mind playing a song? We can close it out. But I do want to give an opportunity. Just if God in this time has brought up a thought, a moment, deal with it. Deal with it now. Let it go. I have a friend of mine who God is moving amazing and supernatural stuff. People are being healed. People are walking in on dialysis, and they've walked out completely healed of it. And the one thing that he said is the overarching problem that goes with it. The first question he asks is, do you need to forgive someone? And it seems silly, But he said, I walked through unforgiveness. He's seen feet that were pins in it. I saw a picture of it. They actually had an x-ray that he posted on there. And God healed this lady's foot, or this guy's foot, completely healed it after he had repented and asked for extended forgiveness to people that had hurt him years ago. And he went in and had an x-ray because there was a pain in there. And God had, or when his foot got healed, it had actually bent the nail, the pins that they had put in there. Don't walk out of this room if God's prompting you. Don't walk out and say, I'll deal with it later. Deal with it today. And it is a choice. There is a conscious choice you have to make that says, I'm going to forgive them even if I never see that there's any change.